Welcome to the next episode of Dot Game. In this episode, we're going to finish out the shop UI by populating the data inside of the UI based off of our scriptable objects so that we'll be able to kind of build off of that and eventually purchase. So I guess really let's go ahead and get started. Let's take a look at populating the inventory data next. And to do that, we're going to create yet another script. So I'm going to create a new, new folder, and we're going to call this, it's probably a terrible name, that's okay. And then let's see what happens if I do. That is handy. Actually think we don't need this, but it added Unity Engine and the non-stuff. So I just used the Unity Project tab instead of the solution. So solution will just give you kind of like a raw C# script. The Unity Project tab will give you, will give you one that follows that template. So this is a similar template to what you see if you're going inside of Unity and doing it that way. And I think you can actually define this to like prompt you for a rename as well. So I'm going to call this store UI controller. And then I'm going to copy that so that I don't mess it up. So remember, the name of your file has to match the class. So if these two are mismatched, then Unity will have a problem. Just make sure it picked it up okay. It looks like it did. Okay. So we're going to want two properties. So we're going to do the same thing, serialize field to get it to show up on the UI. We're going to do game object item template. So these are our templates that we're going to want to show up on the store. So remember we had that scroll area, we had kind of the templates that were down here, the items, the store item container and the currency definition. So we're basically just storing a spot for us to reference what these templates instead of loading them from resources or the assets bundle type stuff. So I'll probably end up doing a video on this, but loading from resources is actually highly ill-advised from Unity. Populate, just because it can be resource intensive. So they actually recommend that you don't do that and that you do everything in asset bundles. I still do it on occasion, which I probably shouldn't be admitting on camera, but whatever. It has its moments, I think, of usefulness. Transform. Scroll view. Why is that? Oh, I know what it's doing. Transform. So really what we're doing is we're getting the positioning of the content, and this is going to be where we're going to feed in those objects, because if you remember from the last episode, the scroll view, the viewport, and then the content game object is actually where you feed in the values that you're the game objects that you want to kind of be scrollable, if you will. So we're just saying, hey, let's, in the hierarchy, let's find scroll view. Sorry, I was trying to remember where I was positioning this. And the reason, let me just actually type this out and then I'll explain why I'm doing this content. Okay, so this script is going to live on our store UI object. So that means everything that we try to find is going to basically be a child. So I actually have the wrong find here because this is, I actually need find child. So I need it to basically loop through all of the children, or actually not even loop through all of the children. I just need it to go through its children to find the scroll view, and then from there go another one and find where the viewport is, and then again find basically the third child. So you could do this the long way. So you could go transform, find, something. And then you could do the same thing. You could go find something else, So like this could basically be scroll view, this could be viewport, and it's this right here is just a condensed way of doing kind of the chained one. Okay. So now that we've gotten the content or where we want to add each thing, we need to start looping through. So we can just do a for each. We'll leave this as item, I guess. And then we'll do in inventory list. Oops. Oh, I spelled that right. I don't know why. Inventory. Oh, I think I called this. This is a horrible naming by me. Inventory. I'm going to change this. We're just going to call this item. You don't like that name. Where was I? There. We're going. So we're going to go into the list and then the scriptable object, and then we're going to pull out all of the inventory items that are part of that list, and we're going to loop through each one. And then we're going to basically instantiate a version of the item store container. So this is very similar to the stuff that we did at the navigation where we were instantiating that little circle that pops up when you move. We're going to do that same kind of pattern to instantiate the store item container. So we'll do game object new item, and then you can do instantiate. And then the first parameter is what item you want to create a copy of. Because remember, it's not taking that object and putting it in the world, it's creating a copy of that object in the world. And then the next one is the parent. So the parent we want is the scroll view content. So this is going to be childed under the content. And I think actually we could probably run this and see it just pull in, should pour in like four, I need to put it on something. And we actually need to call it. We can kind of see this. So I'm putting this again on the store object, and then we're going to have a reference to these. And then we actually need to call this, and that is going to happen in our coroutine. So what I'm basically going to have it do is I'm going to have it populate. I'm going to have it populate the data before the person's arrived. That way we know that it's probably fine. By the time that they've come, everything's been good and loaded. Get component. I think we're going to have to get the store UI controller. I go populate inventory, and then we'll do inventory list. There. So we're going to populate, then we'll do our wait stuff, then we'll call it. And disable this. No, it didn't work. Why didn't it work? Oh, I wonder if it lost. I think it probably lost. Yeah, it lost all my data when I changed it from inventory list to inventory items. So it didn't actually have anything to populate it with. Now, let's see. We can actually see that it happened. And we see a couple of problems. So I already know what this is because I've encountered it numerous times. Sometimes when you instantiate an object, it decides to change its scale. I actually don't know why this is, but what is a good fix for it is you can just change the scale yourself. So we can do, what did I call you? New item, transform local scale. Oops. Equals. And we can actually do, so you could do new vector and then like 1, 1, 1 or whatever, or you can do vector 3.1. Now, if we come back in, fingers crossed, should have the right sizing. There we go. So now, I mean, it's all empty because obviously we haven't populated any of the data, but we see that we have four items. You can actually see every time we click on her, the list grows because it keeps loading it in. So we're going to have to handle clearing this out as well. But one thing at a time. So let's continue to populate our items. So we can do, again, new item, transform, find child, and then I think we call it, I totally put it, it's like my fingers were typing what I was thinking. Wasn't entirely sure if that's the right name, so we'll have to look. Image, so we're gonna, I'm missing Unity Engine UI. And that'll give me access to things like image and text, the things that we're going to be messing around with. And then sprite, item.sprite. So you could do a check. So if you're not guaranteed that each item will have a sprite in it, you could do a check. I've made like an unknown sprite. So it's just like a little question mark that pops up for each of the icons. They didn't have time to actually make nice looking sprites, so they're my placeholder. Don't judge it too hard. I know it's just a question mark, but I'm sensitive. I'm not really. I could be. Get components. So I'm just really doing the same thing here. And in that I'm getting the individual components. This is actually another technique I do. I usually write out everything and then I come back and fill this in later. But I'm just getting all of the components that I know I want to do. So like this one is going to be the name. Oops. There we go. Which I think I named name. Some of these might not work. And then I'm copying it because the next one I think was just called description. And I think that will do it. Let's find out. Find out how good my memory is. So used to my games taking a while to start up. Throws me off when she doesn't. Oh, look at that. So we've got it populating with the icon. So if we were to change this to a different graphic, the next time we came to the shop, it would be the different one. Our title, still no currency. That's pretty easy fix. So we can kind of loop. We'll do another loop. And we'll call this cur. And this is going to be inventory. No, it's actually item. Item dot purchase price. So it'd probably be good to do a quick refresh on the hierarchy of this. So here's item. This is what we're working with again. So again, we've got the name, the description. You've seen us access that. We've got the image that is displayed, which actually I think I changed this from the last time. It was a texture 2D. I don't remember why I did that. So I just switched it to a sprite so I didn't have to do any weird conversion stuff. And then we have purchase price. So this is the one that we're working with right now, which is an array of currency definition. And currency definition has the type of currency and then the amount. And this is where it's going to get a little confusing because in the currency type is actually where we have the name, which we don't really care about for the display purposes. And then it has its image tied to it. So basically what I did is I went through and I created just standard currency because I didn't need to recreate the notion of these currencies every single time I worked with a new object. I really just had like a flat, I'm gonna have copper, I'm gonna have gold, I'm gonna have silver, maybe I'll come up with some weird, you know, non-standard one later, but these are all pretty straightforward and the image that's tied to them wouldn't be any different. So it made sense to kind of pull these out into their own thing. So again, bubbling back up to currency definition, it basically has a reference of this object. So if we take a look here, we can see purchase price, we've got two, and we've got the silver coin and then the amount, and then, or sorry, copper coin and amount, and then silver coin and amount, so 99 and 10 tied to it. So probably a little bit of a weird hierarchy, but it seems to kind of work well for this. So what we can do is we are going to do the same kind of thing where we're going to instantiate. Actually, I'll just copy this. We're going to instantiate a new copy. We're not going to do item template. We're going to do currency template. And currency template is, again, the stuff that's going to appear, that will show the image and then the amount. And it'll show a list of them, hopefully no more than three, because that's all that technically has space for on it, which is probably a bad design on my part. I just figured the chances of more than three currency are pretty slim. And then the parent for this is actually, it's actually the new item. It's child currency slash list, I hope. So these are going to be childed under, let me start this. So as you look at this hierarchy, and we look at this currency, we come here, pop this into 2D. So currency is this section here. The list is basically this section that doesn't include the button. And so this currency definition is going to populate in the list. And again, like I said, there's really only room for three items at this one. But we'll basically loop through, and we'll pull out the numbers and the value and put them here. So what I just got was the parent that it's going to be. And then we're going to do very similar stuff. In fact, we can probably just copy this down. We got to reset the local scale so that it doesn't freak out on us. And then we'll just do... This one was just called image. And then our actual image is cur.currency.image. Ah, yes. And then amount and then we'll just do the text is going to be cur amount and then that I think that does everything. So this is airing out because I have it as an int. We just need to do two string. In theory, this should all work. There we go. So I accidentally clicked on her again. So we still have the problem where we're constantly feeding in these items. And then we have the movement where we can kind of click. So we haven't locked it out. And then the last thing is we still can't close this window. So a few more things to do. So the first is we can lock the movement. We're going to do that on movement controller. Ah, I was trying to remember which ones were my challenge and which ones I was going to show you. This one is not a challenge, so we will work through it. Oops. Oof. All right, I'm going to avoid refactoring because that's going to cause problems, but this is going to drive me crazy if that doesn't get moved up. So I'm going to create a new variable, is movement locked. So basically going to just use this to toggle whether or not the player can move. Oops. And the check for that is going to happen here. So under update, where we have get mouse button down, this is like our click movement. So we're going to say if we've clicked and the player can actually move, then hey, let's go do some stuff. But if the player can't move, then we'll skip out of it because, you know, we've locked them. And then in merchant interaction, because we have a reference to move controller, we could technically set this to a variable, so I'm probably being a little lazy here, but point, I guess, will be made. So we will, after we do set active, we're going to set the is movement locked to false, or to true, sorry. So we'll do move controller dot is movement locked equals true. Now we need a way to shut this off, and that's going to come into play with our store UI controller. So let's collapse this. We're going to add a close window method. So the logic behind this is when the player reaches the merchant and all of this stuff turns true, then we know for sure we want to lock it down, right? They haven't aborted moving everything. They made it. The window's viewable. They shouldn't be able to move. So we'll lock it down as the very last step of the things that we do. And then close window. So our logic where the window gets closed for whatever reason is going to restore that movement back. Because that's the point where it's okay again. So we'll do game object We're gonna actually also shut off the window. So the first thing we'll do is hide the window. We are technically toggling the active of the parent as well in the other thing, but I think I'm gonna end up leaving the one, the canvas turned on and the store's the one shut off. So this is only gonna worry about the closed window. So the part that I struggle with is like, I keep kind of thinking through how would I design the overall UI experience for this? And the thing that I keep flip-flopping back and forth behind is, do I wanna go with you only have a single window open at a time, or and you can't move it around the screen, or do you have multiple windows open at a time, in which case you can kind of move it around the screen, and that affects actually a whole wide range of stuff. So the format that we've kind of designed for in this episode is you have it on the screen, it's locked, you cannot move off of it until you've closed that window and you can move on. But that whole thing kind of impacts whether or not you would have maybe that top level canvas turned on or off, and a whole bunch of stuff. So I've kind of flip-flopped a little bit back and forth behind this, but I think I'll operate on the notion that that canvas, that top level one, is going to stay active, and we're going to toggle between the store and maybe any other of the UI elements that we have. So in that case, the other one that we looked at where I was toggling both and making sure both were set active, the setting the canvas one probably really wasn't needed, but it's not the end of the world. Okay, so jumping back into this. To toggle this, we need to have a instance of the move controller or movement controller. So if I do private movement controller, player move controller, so it's probably to be done a little bit better, a little more efficiently or better positioning, but I think we'll end up refactoring this, to look at the singleton pattern a little bit later. Didn't even click. Don't know what it was doing. Sorry. So player. We're going to find the movement controller type. So this will basically traverse through objects and look for this. So this is actually super traverse through the hierarchy. This is handy if you want to get a reference to a game object, and let's say they are the only ones that have a specific script. You can essentially do you can essentially do this type of thing, and then you could do like dot game object or something to pull the entire object off if you wanted to. All right, so with that, we can do player move controller equals, or no, it's is movement locked. You are no longer. So the notion is when the window gets closed, we'll disable the window so you can't see it, and then we'll give control back to the player so they can start moving. So if we take a look in this and we click on like the close button here, you see a lot of different properties. You can adjust the coloring, the highlighting, the pressed, disabled, and kind of mess with how the button renders when you're doing the hovering and, you know, highlighting, things like that. You can also use this component to set the on-click behavior. This could technically be done in code, and again, or you can use this UI. So the way you do it is you have to reference an object that has the script tied to it that you want to, that the method exists on. So in this case, it's the store game object that has the store UI controller script, and on this script, we want it to call close window. So this is the way that we can basically have a single script, and if we had multiple buttons, such as the buy button, which we still need to hook up, we can have that logic on this top level one and then just use the child components to reference that method. So it's super handy. So pushing play, we move around, click her, do a really weird long navigation path for some reason. And then now we have the shop. If I try to click out, nothing happens because the movement's been disabled. I can still scroll. I could click the buttons, it would execute logic if we had it, and if I click this X button, it's gone, and we can move. So looking at the one bug again, she made it. We have the UI, and again, it did a duplicate of items. So we're actually going to end this project here, because this problem of the duplicated items is actually the challenge for you at the end of this the end of this episode. So there's actually two challenges with this. So the first is the duplication. So basically what you need to do is write logic that every time they interact with the merchant, this item list gets cleared out before it gets populated. And a hint for that is you can traverse all of the children objects by doing a loop on a transform. So if I did like a for each loop on content, it's actually going to loop through all of the children. And then we looked at destruction in the I think it was navigation part two, but it's very simple destroy logic that you can use to do that. So that's the first challenge. The other challenge is while we added the ability to stop the coroutine in one of the methods, I don't think we ever actually hooked it up. So as the player navigates around, let's say I click on the merchant, which has triggered this, but I've aborted and she stops moving. Because we're only evaluating on the criteria of movement, even though I moved away from the merchant, no message ever got sent to anything that said, hey, we've just aborted that movement. So the next challenge is to take that coroutine, stop coroutine, and figure out where in the game logic so far this belongs. And I'll give you a hint the way I solved it at least was on the movement controller. So the same kind of area where we're detecting what we've hit in that raycast is a good spot for detecting whether or not we're not navigating there anymore. So that's it. Per the usual, I will have this solution along with my solution to the two challenges that I just named off on GitHub, so you can take a look at how I approached it. As with everything in development, there are lots of ways to solve this, so if you have a really cool, interesting way that you did it, feel free to share. And then I guess I will see you guys on the next episode. Thanks.